This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. We're watching a documentary a month for our Econ Extra Credit project. Now, this month, it's Through the Night, a powerful film about a round-the-clock childcare facility in New Rochelle, New York, catering to the children of people working overnight shifts, swing shifts, and multiple jobs. Now, here's a clip of Dolores Hogan, proprietor of the childcare center that she and her husband run from their home.
I go to bed about 2 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I go to bed at 4. We take turns and everything, and he let me sleep. But sometimes it's like, maybe we better stop doing this. And then a parent will call on the phone. And they'll go, I'm going through this, and I'm going through that, and I lost my mom. I don't have nobody to watch my baby. I'll hit me in my heart, or hit him in his heart.
He is her fellow caregiver, Patrick. Joining us is Loida Limbaugh, director and producer of the film Through the Night. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
How does a human being actually pull off this work? It's just so difficult.
Yes, it's incredibly difficult. And, you know, I think the short answer and really the only answer is you pull it off at an enormous price. It requires incredible sacrifice.
When do Dolores and Patrick Hogan, masters of delivering childcare, as we see, when do they sleep?
Well, they have a very haphazard sleep schedule. You know, you heard Dolores say it in the clip that you played. You know, sometimes she gets to bed at 2 a.m. Sometimes she gets to bed at 4 a.m. It depends what's going on. It depends if there was a last minute change in the shift of one of her parents, if there's a snowstorm, if there's some traffic, if there's delay. I mean, you know, there's so many variables when you are providing this kind of critical care for working families that their sleep schedule is a bit all over the place, just like the parents' work schedules are. And, you know, it means that they don't get enough sleep. They really don't, which is part of what I really wanted to highlight. You know, it's that we're at a point in the United States where our economy treat sleep as a luxury that only the lucky few can get.
And you also see that with the parents who have the children in the daycare facility. Some of them are working night shifts. Sometimes it's the swing shift. Sometimes it's multiple jobs. Here's one of the mothers, Marisol Valencia.
I'm very tired. If I'm not working one job, I'm working another job. I'm always working and working. It's nonstop. I want to have one job that I can spend time with my kids, have a house. That's my goal. But it's very hard with my kids because I don't get out until like 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock. If I wouldn't have Nunu, I don't know what I do.
Nunu is the name the kids and some of the parents use for Dolores, who, you know, runs the daycare facility. Ms. Limbaugh, this is not just a portrait of the economics of a daycare facility. This is also where we are in America with our work lives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You hear Marisol say that she's working 3 jobs when we first meet her, and she's working those 3 jobs because none of her employers would agree to give her full-time hours because they didn't want to have to pay for benefits, health insurance, and other things like that. And so she had to patch together, you know, 3 different jobs in order to be able to provide. They live in Westchester County, New York. The cost of living is rather high. And you can imagine, you know, the decision to take on a 3rd job, which just meant, you know, that her schedule was insane.
So there you have a central part of the conundrum. The daycare facility might want to hire on more people so the people who run it can get more sleep, there'd be more employees, but that costs money, and that would mean the daycare facility would have to raise the price it charges the parent. But when you meet a parent like Ms. Valencia there, she can't pay more.
Exactly. It's a tightrope that working parents, particularly low wage, you know, the working poor or the working class, have to walk in the United States to just live. You know, we're not talking about people wanting to do anything beyond the basics, right? Have a roof over your head, provide food, just the basics, right? Clothing, education for your children. And somehow we have ended up in a place in the United States where it is this difficult. People are caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, in order to afford care, sometimes they have to take on more work which then forces them to be away from home longer hours. And so it's this sort of never-ending cycle that is, in my opinion, very violent and very brutal. And we are not having enough honest conversations about it in the United States.
And your filming was before pandemic, right?
This is before the pandemic, exactly.
So imagine daycare places, and we've been doing some coverage here, trying to recruit workers now with worker shortages and the prices of getting extra labor in rising.
Right. And also even to take a step back, you know, something like 60% of daycares in the United States closed due to the pandemic. Daycare providers and specifically home-based daycare providers like the one like Dolores and Patrick, who we meet in the film, they operate on very, very thin margins, which means that they just simply don't have the bandwidth to withstand even small crises, much less, you know, something as catastrophic as the pandemic has been. And so many of those daycares are not coming back. They are not reopening, you know, and the ones that did had to sort of jump through all sorts of hoops in order to keep their doors opened. Dolores and Patrick themselves basically ran through their savings and their retirement funds in order to keep the doors open and keep their staff employed, because their staff is like family to them, you know, and they didn't want to lay people off. And, you know, and so they've had to make really tough decisions themselves, right? So there's the people that had to close. There's the people that stayed open that now are going to have these long-lasting, long-term effects that they may or may not be able to recover from.
One of the issues that emerges for me is the sustainability of an enterprise like this. Dolores and Patrick are clearly extraordinary. I would say they are heroic. But that is not something people can do forever and ever. And replacing these two particular people would be very difficult. I mean, I guess the question is, what kind of system is it that depends on heroes being heroic nearly 24 hours a day?
It's a violent, brutal system. In my opinion, that's the kind of system that requires, or rather demands, that kind of sacrifice from individual people.
This work is hard. I don't want to stop doing what I'm doing because I feel like if I lay down, I'm so tired I might not get back up. I have to keep on moving because I have something to do.
We are demanding that individual people show up in the world as heroes or as angels, sacrifice themselves, their well-being, their family's well-being, in order to shoulder a responsibility that, in my opinion, should be a societal responsibility. It is not fair, it is not right, it is not just to ask two individuals, one family, to shoulder this responsibility.
One of the fun parts of the film, there are fun parts of the film, besides the charming kids, is watching what pros Nunu and Pop Pop are at delivering the childcare. I mean, there is some virtuoso childcare going on.
Well, it's funny that you say that because, you know, we filmed with them during all sorts of hours of the day. Sometimes we were there for very long stretches of time. And I'm talking about early morning, nighttime, summertime, winter, holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, first day of school, all the sort of the seasons, right, and different moments of their lives. And I'm a parent myself. I have two young children. And they were in loving daycare facilities. But I have to say, I don't think I'd ever seen an environment that functioned as seamlessly. You know, there was this way where there was this sort of a rhythm and this sort of multi-directional care giving, right? So we are talking about Nunu and Patrick as the caregivers. But the parents also look out for Nunu and Patrick, and they look out for each other's children. The children look out for each other, and that's not just the older ones taking care of the younger ones. Sometimes the younger ones are taking care of the older ones. There is a real beauty in the way that care becomes this kind of communal project in that space, which I think is really, you know, indicative of the ways in which low-income folks of color specifically survive in this country. I was raised, you know, in a low-income. I grew up in the South Bronx, working mother. My mother worked nights as well. And these are the networks of care that we have always had to create in order to survive really harsh conditions.
So who watched you when she was working late?
Hodgepodge, you know, neighbors, sometimes aunts, friends of friends. When my mother was raising me, she didn't know of anything like Nunu's service. You know, this is 30 plus years ago. But she also had to start leaving me alone at a really young age, which was an impossible choice, which many parents, especially essential workers, have had to make in this pandemic when schools were closed, when daycares were shut, you know, and they had to absolutely show up for work. Guess what? You know, you have young kids staying home alone. You have a young kid taking care of an even younger kid, right? This is what we're doing to working families and to working people in the United States. And we have been for a really long time, pre-pandemic.
Loida Limbaugh is the director and producer of Through the Night. She's also senior vice president for programs at Firelight Media, a nonprofit supporting documentary filmmakers of color. Ms. Limbaugh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to be on your show.